We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Height filling in here today for Mr. Ed Martin. We got a couple of great interviews coming down the pike, and I am sitting in here at the beginning of the program, and I'll be back to wrap us up here on the Pro-America Report. Thanks for letting me be with you today, and thank you for being here. Boy, there's a lot going on. I feel like I say that all the time, but that's a kind way of saying, holy cow, could we please stop the shenanigans? Sorry, you got some PG language there, shenanigans. It's what's going on. It's what's happening across the board, what's happening in D.C. Oh, it's what's happening in a lot of states, too, that's for sure. But we do have a lot going on. Before we dive into it, though, today on the program, let me remind you, go to proamericareport.com. That is Ed's Substack. You'll want to subscribe there. Keep tabs on what he's doing. It definitely corresponds very frequently with the What You Need to Know and a lot of the content of the show. Also, head over to phyllisschlafly.com. phyllisschlafly.com is where you'll find the archives of the Pro America Report, the podcast, the guest segments on their own, all the links and resources, the stuff that matters that we talk about here that you'll want to go and send to a friend. Go and find it there, links and resources. And of course, you can sign up for the all-important email list. That is where you'll get the wink email, What You Need to Know, every weekday morning into your inbox at 7 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Eastern, and all the concurrent time zones. Don't miss out. Don't miss out. There's a lot in those nice short little emails. But we got a great show today, a packed out show, and I am looking forward to diving into it. We have Amber Smith. She is a veteran helicopter pilot and the author of a new book, How the Woke Left is Destroying the American Military. She is coming on to talk about her book. Actually got to pre-record a segment with Ed, even though he had to skip out. So I'm looking forward to hearing that one quite a bit. She is talking about the military's shift, looking at climate change, DEI, oh boy, all kinds of things. And then we're actually going to replay something that I think everyone needs to hear. If you didn't hear it yet, you need to listen to it again. Josiah Lippincott, a good friend, up-and-coming friend of the Pro-America Report. He talked to Ed earlier this week about an article he had in the American Greatness, the wonderful amgreatness.com. And it's putting together two hot topics that I hadn't drawn a distinction for. I hadn't drawn a distinction between before. And it is definitely a really good one to get into. So looking forward to hearing that interview as well. But before we get there, we have to get into what you know, what I know, the all-important wink, the What You Need to Know here at the beginning of the show. And boy, is it a doozy today. This is something I think we may have touched on, but we're in a critical stage here, a critical stage of something that needs to be addressed, and there's a little bit of an opportunity. It's gone quite a bit. It's gone pretty far. However, there is still a hurdle left. Here's what you need to know. George Soros is coming for your radios. George Soros is coming for your radios. That's what you need to know. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, let's back up and take one quick step. George Soros, the boogeyman, I think the right's best boogeyman we've had in a long time. And truly, he is a terrifyingly dangerous figure. One of the big money men, one of the big foundation runners that, what do we call it? The all-important, I say all-important, the all-powerful and dangerous and terrifying fourth branch of government, the nonprofits. Oh boy, the Soros foundations have their tentacles in everything. I think chief on our minds, especially this week, we look at Alvin Bragg and see a lot of district attorneys across the country. There's Soros money that has gone into their campaigns, made sure to put them into office. Boy, that has been a terrifically successful strategy, a terrifyingly successful strategy, hasn't it? Folks in St. Louis know, folks down in Atlanta. The Trump administration or the Trump campaign knows it now more than ever, probably, as they are at the whim of Alvin Bragg up in New York and Fannie Willis down in Atlanta, Georgia. The George Soros tentacles have made their way deep into American politics and culture and life. But George Soros is making a move now on radio. Radio is obviously one of the big bastions of conservative media. For a long time, the left has had their stranglehold on traditional media, on news, on old mainstream newspapers, on TV news, cable news channels, on Hollywood and the entertainment and fiction side of it. Well, radio has long been a bastion of conservatism, all the way back to the days of Rush Limbaugh establishing this dynasty of conservative talk. Well, the second largest network of radio stations in the country, owned by Odyssey, that has actually gone belly up in the middle of a bankruptcy deal. Odyssey going under. The Soros Management Fund, Soros Fund Management stepped in and essentially acquired this second largest radio network, Odyssey. They purchased over $400 million in debt held by the company. Again, I'll say, because I can't say it too many times, the second largest broadcast radio station owner in the country. That is a big deal. That's a really, really big deal. But what is even more terrifying is this is being fast-tracked. They're asking, at least, for this to be fast-tracked. Now, here's what's happened. Courts, when big mergers and acquisitions and things like this happen, there's a reason why there are layers and hoops and hurdles, things to jump through, things to jump over. There's lots of jumping. And it's that way on purpose, because this stuff shouldn't just be easy. This is one of those moments where, as a conservative, we tend to like government, because as much as government does that it's not supposed to do, this is one of those things, ensuring a fair and open marketplace, ensuring there are not monopolies that can cheat and defraud and cripple the free market economy. This is one of the reasons that government exists. This is one of its legitimate behaviors, one of its legitimate spheres of influence that we want government to have. Well, that's why it takes layers and layers and layers of approval to get things like this through. So a court has already approved this. This is moving forward. However, this still needs the approval of the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. Federal Communications Commission. You say enough alphabet soup names from the executive branch and you get lost in the letters. It's amazing how much damage 26 letters in the alphabet can do, isn't it? But that's a whole separate wink. I'll just stop there before we go down the rabbit hole. The FCC, the FCC still has to approve this change in ownership. Now, there are extra hurdles. The Soros Fund Management is obviously a foreign interest. You know, George Soros has dual citizenship, is Hungarian. The Soros Fund Management is a foreign interest. Well, the FCC runs a very normal, long statutory process that makes sure that radio stations are not subject to undue foreign influence. Now, I'm not quoting from anything. I'm combining a bunch of words here from different places. But typically, FCC rules would forbid a foreign company from owning the majority of a radio station, at least if I have gone in and understood it correctly, because, again, there's layers and layers to this. But here's what's happening. Chip Roy, a congressman from Texas who has rightfully earned a firebrand understanding from a lot of us out in the hinterlands of America as he causes hay, makes hay, raises heck, all the things out in D.C. He's the one raising the alarm over this, because Odyssey, the company that has been now purchased, or at least $400 million of it has been purchased by the Soros Fund Management, Odyssey is requesting that the FCC give a temporary exemption to the existing rules that forbid foreign company ownership of U.S. radio stations to exceed a 25% share. Well, the Soros Fund Management's not less than 25%. Soros Fund Management now owns over, well, will potentially own over 50%, a majority hold of the shares. So that would usually slow down this approval process significantly. But Odyssey is asking, yeah, please let them buy us and let's exempt that normal rule. Let's just go ahead and move it forward. But guess what? That rule is there for a very good reason, to stop foreign ownership of things like the second largest network of local radio stations. So we are literally on the edge of George Soros very quickly being able to what we could term realize ownership interests. What that means is take the reins of hundreds and hundreds of local radio stations across the country. This is bad news. This is a call your congressman and tell your congressman to harangue the FCC and make sure that they don't give special exemptions, special favors, toss this stuff out there super fast, because George Soros, a huge partisan leftist hack, is trying to buy the second largest radio chain, or the second largest radio network in America. Bad news. That's what you need to know. So come on back. I hate to end on a note there, but that's where we are. Come on back here after the break. We got a lot to get into here on the Pro America Report, proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com, and we will be back after the break with a couple of great guests. We'll see you then.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Very, very interesting. Our next guest, I was talking with her off the air, as I often do. I often tell folks that I end up learning so much about folks. Amber Smith, she is a veteran. She was a helicopter pilot in the 101st Airborne Division, which is enough there to sort of, catch your attention. She flew in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, you've probably seen her all over Fox News, Newsmax, other places. OfficialAmberSmith.com is her website, and she was a deputy assistant to the Secretary of Defense. So she worked in the administration. She has a new book. It comes out in just a few days, Unfit to Fight: How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. Welcome to the program, Ms. Smith. How are you?
Thank you. I am great. It's good to be with you.
Nice to be with you. And we should say the book is from our friends over at Skyhorse Publishing. I appreciate those guys a lot. Okay. You succeeded in the military. You were a successful pilot. You served, and that wasn't that long ago. So the timing of what you were describing in Unfit to Fight, what's the pivot? Is it kind of being glib? Is it the Obama years? Is it we just finally hit a critical mass? You did fine, I think. And therefore, what changed in terms of the timing?
So when I served, the military was very focused on the mission. It had a strong sense of purpose, and that was to ensure that we had the training and equipment necessary to be the most lethal and successful fighting force in the world. And this was during the post 9/11 wars. Yes, I served for most of my time in the Bush administration, and then a little bit in the early days of the Obama administration. And things quickly started to change when Obama came into office. We saw him changing some policies to open the doors to what we're seeing today, which is the floodgates have opened. But back then, he changed the policy on transgender service members, allowing them to serve, and then as well as opening combat positions and to women unrestricted. They lifted the ban on that as well. Mm-hmm. You then saw the Trump administration tried to reverse the transgender policy. And then once Biden took office, it was like the gloves were off in terms of executive order after executive order, focusing on DEI, transgender policy, really focusing on, you know, stating that climate change was the biggest threat to national security and that white extremism was the biggest internal threat to the military. And in doing so, focusing on that, that's a distraction from the mission. And the military has suffered because of it in recruiting, in retention, and in morale of those serving.
We're talking with Amber Smith. Her book is called Unfit to Fight. It's in the title, Unfit to Fight: How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. One of the things in the book that you say, and it's in a couple different ways, I'm going to say it positively. The military has to discriminate in favor of the mission. If it discriminates in favor of, you know, say someone is black or white, okay, that's a problem. But you don't say, oh, you know what, we don't care. You can be weak. We're going to let you carry a heavy pack, but we don't care because we don't want to discriminate against weak. We have to discriminate against people. You can't let people that pass out fly helicopter pilots like you did. So you can't say diversity is in itself is what you have to reward if you're sacrificing the mission. The question is, how does these are people that are, you know, the people at the high level of the military, they're serious people. They don't want to lose men and women to accidents or to mismanagement, I don't think. Is it just that they are buffeted along and they're too high up in their rankings and their careers? Are there really sort of evildoers that just want to see America fail? What is it you would describe as the, you know, as how this can be happening?
Well, first of all, you are correct. There's no right or guarantee of military service. You have to meet certain criterias and certain standards. And then the same goes for once you're in the military. The military used to be a meritocracy where the best person, the most qualified person was selected for these positions. What we're seeing now is a shift in culture and sort of leadership where they do want to qualify a person based on characteristics that they were born with. So skin color, gender, things that they can't change. They want that to be a factor in certain demographics in every job and part of the military. When it comes to leadership, making these decisions, it is a lot of things. It's a culture of yes men, where they just go along to get along, do whatever is told of them. We saw this exactly with the COVID vaccine mandate, where commanders were given an order that didn't fit with what Secretary Austin ordered them to do. And they were essentially giving an unlawful order to the troops. So we saw them just saying, you know, no critical thinking, no, this is not right. Instead, just went with the system and destroyed a lot of lives because of it. So it's not like, you know, good versus evil. It's just a group of senior officers that have become yes men and a culture that enables that and promotes it. And you see those type of individuals failing upwards.
Amber Smith, again, her book from Skyhorse Publishing, Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. My old boss, late Phyllis Schlafly, I don't know if she coined the term, but she popularized it in a certain period of time, and she called it military superiority. And the idea was you had to be better than the other military. She traced it all the way back to George Washington and some of his early speeches. You got to be better than, you got to be so good, so superior that your enemies know not to mess with you and your allies know they can rely on you. But what happens when our military becomes, for lack of a better term, it's a little dramatic, but it's close, you know, a kind of social agency? You have, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of employees of the military who are in the military, and they're not, it's not about military superiority. It's about managing, you know, massive bureaucracies that are different. I mean, can you envision, again, you worked in the administration too, you know, at a senior level. Can you imagine shifting the Defense Department and the military back towards something where you could say, let's be superior, not as a social services agency, but as a military?
I do. In terms of hope, it's going to take a change in presidential administration. It's going to take a Secretary of Defense who understands the threat associated with this. And the I do think people are starting to wake up to the significant problems that exist culturally inside the Department of Defense and how it has shifted off course and lost its, you know, sense of purpose and priorities. In order to get it back on track, it's going to take a lot of coordination from leadership and want to have it change. But that's only a certain aspect of it. That's like executive orders that can be ripped up and policy changes. When we're talking about culture, that's generational, because it's, you know, the younger generation of second lieutenants coming out of West Point, where they've been taught critical race theory for 4 years instead of, you know, battlefield tactics and leadership, that is going to take a generation to change. And, you know, so I said the policy changes will be easier. The cultural change is what is kind of going to be, you know, the uphill battle there.
But, and when you say that you're optimistic. You mentioned the academies. I mean, can you, I can't remember the name of the professor. I think he was a Naval Academy guy, a retired professor. And he said, I'm not sure you can save the academies at this point.
Yeah, you saw General Milley sort of infamously testifying on Capitol Hill that, you know, what is white rage? And he wants to learn more about it. And he lists all the books that, you know, some that are being read at the service academies and how they are actually universities and there needs to be diversity of thought. Yeah, they might be universities in terms of you get a 4-year degree, but you are training future military leaders. That's like the big distinction, right? Is it just military mm-hmm. service versus civilian service? And so, no, the cadets at these service academies, it's not a place to go learn about activism. If you want that, then go to a civilian university. There's plenty of, you know, woke progressive ideology shoved down your throat there. At the service academies, just like the military itself, it should be focused on skills and education needed to lead troops in battle, in future conflicts and wars around the world, so that we have the most qualified leaders to win wars. Mm-hmm. And that's, unfortunately, that's not what they're getting at the academies. They're getting more of this woke indoctrination that we're seeing in other universities. And they do so under the guise of, well, it's a university. But there, it's more than that.
Well, it's a fascinating book. I'm glad your voice is out there. I'm sorry we're out of time. We'll have you back again, actually. I'll look for an opportunity. Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. Amber Smith, an experienced veteran who has also served in the administration, Trump administration. And our book is out in just a few days from Skyhorse Publishing. We'll have you back. Thank you very much. I got to run to a break. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Catching up, we've had him on the show before, Josiah Lippincott. He's a retired Marine who is now finishing his PhD studies over at Hillsdale College. We love Hillsdale College. And as importantly for you all, you can go to his Substack, which is lippincott.substack.com. It's called Regime Critic. And his writings are there. His background is there. It's a very meaty one. I go to Substack quite a bit. So welcome back, Josiah. How are you, sir?
Ed, I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, over on your Substack, you're writing about this, but this I initially saw this on American Greatness, amgreatness.com. I'll put a link up to the column. Mass deportations would lower housing prices by Josiah Lippincott. And the subheading, subheadline, deporting illegal immigrants and reducing the number of foreigners in this country is a good neighbor policy. It's the kind of moderate centrist solution that should be the basis of bipartisan outreach or bipartisan reach. So, all right. Walk me through first, what's the reality? What do the numbers look like? I know on your Substack, I can see you're charting things out. So walk me through this.
Yeah, so I just saw today, this morning, that the median mortgage payment in America rose to an all-time high today of $2,700 a month. And for people who own a house for the first time, when you have interest rates that are closing in at 8%, the sticker price for a house is $400,000 a year. You know, if you put down the median down payment of $50,000, you're looking at about a $1.1 million outlay over the course of a 30-year loan. And what that means is that to buy an average house in America today, you are signing yourself up for $1 million in debt. And I just don't think that that housing market is currently sustainable. We need solutions. And if we don't get them, it's going to be politically explosive down the line. And that's the key point in all of this.
So I see that, and I think that's getting, you know, I don't know if you follow Mike Cernovich on Twitter for a long time now. It's X, of course, and he's kind of wonderfully, he's got a great style and sensibility. But one of the things I noticed a post recently, he said something like, when he was a young man, he lived a block from the beach, and now you could, and he was 23 or 5 or whatever, he went to law school, I think, but you know, you could, you didn't have a lot of money left over, but you could do that. You can't do that anymore. You can't buy at the beach. You can't even rent at the beach because of the way things. So something went, went off balance. But let me just play the devil's advocate. Can you, first of all, can you deport enough people to change that market? Is that real? Do you think do the numbers hold?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of the in the last 4 years of the Biden presidency, and the numbers, of course, they don't know the full numbers. But what I've seen is that there's about 8 million foreigners, a combination of legal and illegal immigrants who've poured into the country over the last 4 years. And there's been some research showing that a lot of these immigrants have been aimed for red state areas. And it's kind of obvious what's happening. Democrats want to get voters and big business wants to lower wages. And so you have two incentives that allow the American Uniparty to join forces to screw over the ordinary American, both in their voting and economic power. So but the point is, as quickly as these people came to America, they could leave. And if you change a few of the incentives around migration to America, if you expect foreigners to do more, to contribute to the country, to speak English, you're going to make it so that people who are going to come here are going to have to meet a high standard. And right now there is no standard. So American citizenship is being degraded. The value is declining. A lot of migrants come to America and then they send money back abroad and they're repatriating that money. And the point is, if you just taxed money going out of the country, let's say you could pick any number, but let's say you pick 90%, like you can't send this money abroad. If you did that alone, mercenary migrants, migrants who are coming only for sheer economic reasons would leave. And I think citizenship is more valuable than just a dollar sign. It has a spiritual value. You being an American isn't just being part of a shared tax zone or an economic zone. So I think we need to have a new conception of citizenship, and that's not simply monetary. And we also need a conception of citizenship that's good for ordinary Americans.
We're talking again with Josiah Lippincott. Again, his Substack is lippincott.substack.com, a regime critic. Lots of notes there, lots of posts there, lots you can get. You can subscribe initially for no cost. You can support him and his efforts. So I do think this, I will say this, and I noticed this in some of your writing, how you're talking about it. We have to stretch the fake news and the propaganda, and use a regime critic as your title. The regime wants to tell us that deportation is evil and wants to load the word with all sorts of negative connotations and meaning. And one of the things I think your piece does is it puts some meaning on it that's different, but also unload some of that. Like, hey, because if you're going to have that, I think it is a real policy. When you have 10 million, 15 million that have come, you got to have some. It's not going to be enough to say, well, we just won't let it happen again. What do you mean? I mean, the rumor around the Capitol right now is that Joe Biden is going to do some sort of blanket amnesty for people that are here, sort of a waiver of the government's opposition to claims of asylum, and that would be a de facto amnesty. We just can't survive, is your point. You mentioned one phrase in there, though, and I know you served in the Marines, so you know what it's like to be part of an ethos. You go to Hillsdale, which has a very particular, I think, sense of American history, whether it's Dr. Arne or others. You said we need a new conception of citizenship. Did you mean that? Or do you mean we need to recover what we had? Or maybe did what we had in the past, was it happening without us sort of having to articulate it, and we better articulate it now?
Well, no, what I mean by that is it's new to us. The idea of citizenship being serious, that borders are serious, that membership of a political community is a serious thing, and it's a choice. And it should be a choice made both by the person who becomes a citizen, but also by the political community. So when you have mass migration in the way that America has it, the population was never asked to consent to this. When the Hart-Celler Act was passed in 1965, it radically changed America's immigration policy. But the crazy thing was that nobody campaigned. No one campaigned on a dramatic demographic change to the United States. In fact, they said the exact opposite would happen. So at the bare level of consent, of the consent of the governed, our immigration policy is illegitimate. It's not rooted in telling the truth to voters and having an earnest political debate. So when I say I want a new conception of citizenship, I want us to revitalize our understanding of what our country is. And that'll mean going back to some of our principles, which would be new to us. It's been a really long time since we've had a vibrant, true sense of citizenship. So that's what I mean when I say we should refocus in that way.
Josiah Lippincott, his Substack is lippincott.substack.com, regime critic there, and his piece is over at americangreatness.com. You wrote this one. That's American Greatness is going to get you some attention in addition to your Substack. Sure. Much pushback?
You know, of course, I always receive pushback. There's always people who want to accuse me of being a terrible person and not caring about foreigners. And I have the exact opposite view. You know, I'm really hard-headed. There are limitations. Not everybody can be an American citizen. Not everyone should be one. That doesn't mean that someone's evil because they're not an American. It means we need to have a clear-eyed, hard-headed view of what it means to have a country. And to do that, we need to be willing to speak the truth, which is we have immigration laws. We should enforce them. By enforcing immigration laws, ordinary Americans would benefit. The fewer people there are in America, the cheaper housing will be. That's just a reality, supply and demand. And I care about young families being able to purchase homes. So, yes, if that means saying something that makes some people sad, then I'll say it because I care about my country. So
spoken like a true Marine, Josiah Lippincott, again, lippincott.substack.com. One encouragement I make to you is that it, for lots of reasons that have to do with just things go in the way they go, we are having to rediscover, recover, redefine, articulate what citizenship means. I was just looking, it's weird. I wasn't preparing for this part of my interviews today, but I was just looking at Phyllis Schlafly, my old boss, and I'll send it to you, Josiah. She wrote about citizenship. And she said, dual citizenship, that you can't have that because at some point, if you're a citizen of two nations, if they fight, you have to choose. And so the idea of creating something or demeaning something into, as you point out, participation in an economic unit, as opposed to citizenship. If you want to be a participant in a club, you can be a participant in a club. If you're a citizen, that's got a character that's very different. So I think you're onto something there. Unfortunately, we're out of time here. So thank you, Josiah, for doing that. And again, it's lippincott.substack.com. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Have a good one.
All right. We'll take a break, everybody, and we will be right back. A fascinating topic. Really good writer and thinker and fearless in saying things that he sees and therefore getting people thinking. So we will put all that up on social media. We'll take a break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Artificial intelligence, AI, exploded into public consciousness last year. Science fiction became reality in many ways. Now you can ask a chatbot to compose a finely tuned poem. You can ask an image generator to create a new piece of art in the style of your favorite artist. And you can deep fake your favorite singer's voice to sing an original song never before heard. These are momentous changes in the realm of content creation. Even AI-generated videos are becoming nearly lifelike. Our society will need to make many adjustments to accommodate this new technology and what it means for public consciousness. Some complain, and rightly so, that AI programs like ChatGPT have a politically correct bias built into them. The company that owns ChatGPT, OpenAI, has taken steps to remove some of ChatGPT's partisan affiliations, but a little bit of it still remains. This is not the real problem with our new AI tools, however. The real problem touches the depths of the human soul. The book of Genesis tells us that when God created man, He created man in His image. We, as human beings, are blessed to share certain qualities with God. These qualities are what make life fruitful and beautiful. God shared with us His ability to create. He is the master creator, so He imparted some among us to create beautiful art and beautiful music. From Michelangelo to Vivaldi, the divine spark of creativity shines through the human story. Creation is something very special for human beings, but it's also something that AI threatens to take away. AI isn't forcing us to give up our creativity under the barrel of a gun, but rather with the allure of ease. German Catholic philosopher Byung-Chul Han notes that being creative requires that we undergo some pain.
AI promises to make it easy. But the consequence is that our creations will no longer stem from the divine spark of creativity that God has shared with us. If you want to create something, be willing to sweat and even bleed for it, because it's worth it.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. When big tech billionaires silence conservative voices on social media, the very core of American liberty vanishes. It's happening, and it's a slippery slope. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, we have a plan for protecting free speech. It starts with you. Please go to PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height filling in here, closing out the show for Mr. Ed Martin. Man, what a couple of great interviews there. Amber Smith, Josiah Lippincott. There is good stuff happening across the board. Great books and authors, writers online that are coming. It's fantastic. It gives me great hope and excitement to hear from folks like this and hear the firebrand combined with an excellent information. I'm so excited. It's a great reason. I tell you what, there's your great reason if you needed one, like you didn't already have a bunch, to go over proamericareport.com, sign up for Ed's Substack, where a lot of this stuff is being written about. Also, phyllisschlafly.com, where you can find the archives of this program, mainly the Wink email sign up, and also the access to all the standalone segments for these guests, great guests like today. But there is a lot. I know we ramrodded through the big one. George Soros coming down the pike for the second biggest radio network in America and trying to bully the FCC into just saying, yes, sure, let's go ahead and move that through. No, let's not go ahead and exempt a foreign interest from holding the majority stake of hundreds and hundreds of radio stations across America. How about we just not? But it has been a big day on a bunch of other news cycle places as well, as we've looked across all of these things. And I want to put something into perspective here. Here's a what you need to do. And this is not just a wrap up. It's a what you need to do. People need to understand, I think, the extreme ramifications we are facing here in America. And it is increasingly obvious to us as we move along. I know I say that this is, we talk about it all the time. This is the most important election in our lifetimes. It really is. That's not cliche to say. It just is. It seems like each one is more important, and that's not a false statement. But here it is. The stakes are incredibly high this year, and it is incredibly important that people get plugged in beyond even just the party apparatus understanding. Oh, I'm a Republican voter. I'm a Democrat voter. That's fine. There is a huge divide. The Republican Party platform, the Democrat Party platform could not be further from the truth. But as we have just seen again, it's shown to us abundantly clearly, time after time, just having Republican by your name does not make you a conservative, i.e., look no further than Speaker Mike Johnson this weekend passing a bunch of the foreign aid bills without any fixes to the border, sending through the FISA reauthorization after he said he probably wouldn't. Here we go. He's changed his mind. And thanks to Tom Massey, we're seeing now that some of the excuses and reasons were given just aren't even true. Like he got something in a confidential briefing that changed his mind. Tom Massey comes out on Monday and says, I was in the same briefing with Speaker Johnson. I don't know what he saw in FISA that changed his mind, but I certainly didn't see it. These kinds of little reveals are so important to remind us we must keep track of the individuals. We must stay on the individual issues. We must be educated. We must be informed. We must be ready to go to work to talk about these things that matter. Well, here's a biggie. There's been a couple of big ones today and yesterday that have come out. And one of them, I think, is something that, in my opinion, this is a great opportunity for us as conservatives to talk to our friends and family who maybe are kind of partly there, but they're not all the way there yet, especially when it comes to the Trump-Biden election and how different that could look. Trust me, I fully believe and subscribe to the fact that there is a uniparty. There is a group of people who belong to the swamp. Whatever name you want to give it or political party you want to put behind their name, they are bought and paid for. Reminds me of the joke that they should all wear NASCAR jackets so we can see who their sponsors are. That would make it easier. You feel like that some weeks. This is one of those weeks. But yesterday, Joe Biden tweeted something I think gives us an incredible moment of A, clarity to see what is at stake this year, and B, an opportunity to message to people, not just on this issue, but all of them. He tweeted yesterday. I say tweeted. We still haven't come up posted. He just posted on X. Post is so boring. Can we go back, Elon, to the days of tweeting? It's just such a great name. But Joe Biden posted on X, Donald Trump was very proud of his $2 trillion tax cut that overwhelmingly benefited the wealthy and biggest corporations and exploded the federal debt. That tax cut is going to expire. If I'm reelected, it's going to stay expired. Ha! Well, Joe Biden just gave us the heads up that he's going to give us the largest tax increase in recent memory. One of the largest tax increases ever. Because that Trump tax increase, you know what? Yeah, obviously. Guess what? Of course the rich benefited. I benefited and I'm not rich. You probably benefited and you're not rich. That was a beneficiary recipient awesomeness across the board. Now, I'm not saying that every single person's, you know, I'm not trying to speak for every single person's tax situation, but that is so obviously incorrect to look at something like this and say it only benefited the rich. You know, run down the liberal leftist talking points, what they said. That only benefits the rich. No, no. Any across-the-board tax cut is obviously going to help the higher earners most. But guess who pumps money into the economy? Guess who does the hiring? Guess who does the spending? Guess who does all the kind? Guess what? Guess what? This is how it works. This is a great opportunity for us to talk about economics, basic economics, and how the left doesn't have them. They don't even have a clue. Not a single clue about basic economics. You want those tax rates to stay here and not hike on you, the biggest we've seen in our lifetimes? That is a consideration that we each get to make at the ballot box in November. This is one of our opportunities. That's what you need to do. Talk to your friends, your family, your coworkers. We need to be educated on these issues. We need to be informed. We need to be beyond the talking points and down into the issues so that we can engage people who ought to know better, who probably want to know better, but who are listening to too much cable news and don't even know it. Go get them. Get their attention and give them the right information. Send them a link here and point them to the place where we're going to talk about stuff that matters and be honest and real and transparent about what is going on in the world. But that's it. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you for being with me here. Thanks to Ed for leading the show, to Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep things on track, and to you, our wonderful listeners, without whom the Pro America Report would not be possible. Thank you. We appreciate you, and we will see you back here tomorrow on another edition of the Pro America Report.